going on, guys? Welcome back to Pure Evil MMA. I'm your host, as always, Evil Eddie, and I am so happy to be back in studio. Not only that, it's my freaking birthday, so it's time to raise hell for all my Pure Evil MMA fans, because I got somebody that you guys all love, and without any need for an introduction, we got Ben Davis joining us over here. What's going on, Ben? How are you doing?
Great, man. Just got the car washed, taking care of some chores today. So it's a slower Tuesday out in Arizona.
So you want to hear something funny? I mean, we got a lot to talk about on the show today. And before we jump into anything, make sure you guys follow and subscribe here on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Follow me on Twitter at evil_echo. That's EVIL_ECCO. Ben, what's your Twitter?
Ben the Bane Davis on all platforms.
Everyone already knew that, Ben. So last night, it was so funny. You know, after UFC 275 and everything, like, you know, the weekends are a lot of fun. We're all rejoining back together. You know, we all go to work and we have shitty days. But man, on Twitter, I can't tell you guys the community that's on there and how awesome they are. But Ben, you've become somewhat of a celebrity, man. And I saw... No. Well, listen to this. I'm going to pull it up here on the Twitter for everybody to see. There was somebody that tweeted, who would be the president of MMA Twitter? And I'm scrolling through, and at least one third of everybody voted for you.
It's right. Yeah, no, it was very humbling that many view me as a political successor in the future. I have an eighth grade student body president position in my back pocket. So when I need to rip out those skills, Eddie, I certainly can step into the public policy scene.
So you were in eighth grade?
I was in eighth grade. Now I'll tell you this funny story. I was in eighth grade and it was a new school, so I didn't have any friends there.
Same here, man. Body,
yeah, right? It's a tough spot to be in. Now, the student body elections come around and the dude that was running against me, his name was Seth Meyers. Now, I don't know if that name means anything to you, but it's the son of Stephanie Meyers who wrote the Twilight books. So, they're based out in Arizona. So it's Twilight Jr. versus me in the student body president race. And everybody loves Seth, right? He's an established product, Eddie. I was coming in that year, young buck. And we got to the debates and I just smoked.
Were you dressed like this?
I was wearing this exact outfit. No, but we just, you know, we got to the debates and I guess I had a larger value proposition for the eighth grade student body. And ultimately when the votes were read, it was my hand that got raised. So
that's crazy, man. When I moved schools, like I was, you know, I played football and my little brother did wrestling. So that was like kind of my way in. But like at the same time, I also played metal music, this and that. But man, back then, so what year did you graduate?
So I graduated high school in 2018 and then just graduated from ASU a couple months ago.
Oh, wow. You're a young buck, man. I graduated in 2007. And back then, let me tell you, this is around when The Ultimate Fighter was getting really big, all the reality shows. So I got to start with this. When did you start finding interest in mixed martial arts? And was it mixed martial arts that interested you, or was it the media and the hype and the excitement that really drew you in?
It was the fights first and foremost. The first card I watched was John Jones versus Daniel Cormier 2. I was at a Buffalo Wild Wings. My buddy had invited me. I'd heard about UFC before. I never really considered it all that much, but I went and watched that one. And the energy that was at that Buffalo Wild Wings that night was infectious. It was intoxicating. And I just needed to be a fan of this sport. So from that point forward, I was watching weekly. And then in college, I would walk a mile to this shitty sports bar called the Ice House. And I would walk every Saturday just by myself, go watch the fights and then come home. And then, yeah, all the media stuff that's been popping up within the last 2 years. But fights first and foremost, Eddie. That's how I got involved.
So that's so funny that you say that, because that was an amazing fucking fight. The head kick, knockout, DC stumbles. And then, unfortunately, he started crying inside the octagon, which was definitely tough to watch. You know what I mean? But there was so much emotion. There was so much on the line. You know, back in the day, we've seen so many rivalries like that. And John, like, he turned into such a bad guy. But back in the day, man, he was beating all my favorite fighters. And then, You know, he's still around doing it, and nobody gives him the credit. I understand that he has, you know, issues. I've got issues, bro. You know what I mean? Like, for real. And it's like, but no one's been able to freaking beat the guy. I mean, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. It is amazing.
But I do understand where the sentiment has come from over the last several years, because I agree. Everyone's got problems. Everyone makes mistakes and bad decisions. But my sympathy for John Bones Jones has been reduced time and time again because it just seems habitual. I have a hard time getting invested in somebody that is making poor decisions, even though they have every reason not to, even though they have the world in front of them. They've been working so hard to get to the top of the 205 division, defend that belt so many times. And you can be a role model for so many people, or you can be like John Jones. And so I don't know, Eddie, I do understand, but I, at this moment in time, am very critical of Johnny Bones.
With the whole John Bones thing, you know, we see a lot of fighters, Conor McGregor being one of them. They take a lot of time off, and yet they're still in the rankings. Well, actually, Conor got pulled out. What are your thoughts on somebody that's out for a certain amount of time and, you know, wanting to come back and fight? Like Henry Cejudo, for instance. He retired. Right. He wants to come back and fight for a title. GSP wanted to come back, fight for a title against Bisping. How do you feel about that?
I think that it's very case by case, and it really depends on the star power of the certain individual. Henry Cejudo retired with two belts on each shoulder, and I mean, he was on a great streak. So if he wanted to come back, and he has a claim to a bigger fight when he comes back, and I think that it's warranted. Same thing with McGregor and Jones. I mean, those guys are some of the biggest stars that we've ever seen. If they come back and they cherry pick, they're probably going to get it because the revenue that they generate is way more than anyone else in the company. Same thing with Georges St. Pierre, GSP, top three all time. It makes sense. If you're a fighter like, you know, Charles Rosa, and you take extended time off and then you come back and you're like, give me a big fight at 145. Guess what? Boston Strong. It's not going to happen. But it's, you know, it really, and that's kind of frustrating as well, because you look at the sport and you want to be legitimate. You want to be as accredited as some of these other sports. That shouldn't happen. You shouldn't be able to sit on the sidelines and then come back for a big opportunity. But the reality is, Eddie, baby, this is sports entertainment. So we gotta focus on the entertainment and what brings in eyes, and nobody does it better than McGregor, Bones, GSP. So Cejudo's getting there. I mean, Henry's a bit, I think, outside of mainstream, but, you know, he was on his way. Early retirement, I will say. That was an early retirement.
With that being said, we're jumping into the news, so we'll be right back.
Hell yeah.
All right, now that we are back, it's time to talk about this weekend's insanity that went down. I mean, what was your favorite fight on this card before you watched it? Like, which one were you looking most forward to?
I was really looking forward to Dinah Bhatgiri. I've been high on him since he knocked out my friend Kevin Natividad. So anytime Dinah's fighting, I'm like, I want him to win because it looks good for Kevin. So I was very interested in that one. I will say Jack Della Maddalena is one of my biggest prospects in the sport. 170 pounds, they simply aren't ready. And he proves it again, big finish over Ramazan Amif. But, you know, I will say, this might be a little bandwagon-y, Eddie, but that main event, that really drew my interest before the card and afterwards, was very satisfied. What did you make of that one?
I mean, Glover's from Connecticut, man, and you got to give it to him because, listen, somebody his age, it's almost like Shogun, right? You never thought he was going to be able to come back and be able to hold that title. And with that, man, it's just like, that's the highlight of his career. That's all he ever wanted to do again, you know. And once you get to that point and you lose, I can only imagine how you must feel afterwards, because you're at a certain age, you're older now. Do you really want to go to Bellator? Like, you know, you might have a couple fights left on your contract. Do people really want to see you fight for the title again? Especially in that division. And then it's almost like the Joanna case, where she was like, listen, I lost. I'm kind of passing the torch, you know? I'm passing the torch. And she took her gloves off, and I couldn't even believe it. But at the same time, you look at the poster behind me, you'll see 205 Madison Square Garden, and it was a different Joanna back then. You know, Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor, the hype was there. Joanna, ever since she left her team And I believe she went to American Top Team. She just hasn't been the same in my eyes. So once you get to that point, there's a lot to think about. You're getting older, and the saddest part is, what do you do now? You know, what do you do as an older fighter? This is what you've trained for your entire life, and now you can't do anything besides maybe train or, you know, look at Chuck Liddell. It's a sad story in fighting.
The good news is that both Glover and JJ, in my opinion, have very varied paths forward. They've got a multiple different options. Look at Joanna. She was on the sidelines for 2 years, making a hell of a lot more money doing commercials, different modeling gigs or things like that. So she does have, that's why she was gone, is because she was so focused on the other areas. Glover, on the other hand, I mean, how can you look at his performance and say he should go to Bellator? He should, you know what I mean? Like, it was such a great fight. He had Jiří out on the feet in round five and chose to jump the guillotine, and it obviously cost him the title. But, you know, for Glover, I think, and this is what he said right in the ring, did I look 42? No, then I'm going to keep going. And that's, I think, the mentality that he should have. I think that the success over five rounds against Prohaska should offset any of that doubt that came with losing the title. Because it's like, yes, I worked so hard. I've been there's a decade in the UFC and I got to this level and I lost, but man, I was beating his ass. You know what I mean? Like, and with Yanni and Jacek, I do think that the 2 years on the shelf were very detrimental. I think she should have taken a not lesser fighter, because that's obviously disrespectful to Zhang Weili.
But that's what they do in boxing, though.
You gotta tune up. You gotta tune up, baby. Exactly. Like, JJ's on the shelf. She's rusty. And you're throwing her in there with a serious killer in Zhang Weili. And I understand, right? They had a fight of the year candidate 2 years ago. It was amazing, but this is a different Joanna. And Zhang Weili, on the other hand, has had a couple fights since that first one with JJ, and she's added so many wrinkles to her game that this, I knew that Zhang Weili was going to win. I didn't know that it was going to be a devastating highlight reel KO. And so, you know, if Joanna does say, I want to start a family, I've got all of these other income streams outside the octagon that I want to leverage further, that makes complete sense. She's earned that, one of the greatest of all time in women's MMA. But if she does want to come back, dude, take a smaller fight, work your way back up, because she was doing decent work until that finish.
That's what you said it perfectly. And you know, what about the Valentina fight? Because to me, man, I didn't think she actually won that fight the way I was scoring it, the way I was watching it. But it's almost like a John Bones thing again, where she was trying to beat her opponent at her opponent's game. And we weren't seeing the Muay Thai much. We were seeing Valentina go for takedowns, and I just didn't see the true Valentina there, with the speed and the movement. She was really trying to switch her game up, which I believe was risky. However, she ended up leaving with the title again. But man, it was risky, and her opponent put up one hell of a fight, man.
Oh, Talia Santos did not look like a plus 450 dog. I think that the odds makers should have respected her significantly more. And the thing with Valentina, and you just pointed this out so beautifully, that many other people I haven't heard say, she fights at her opponent's level, right? She's done this with Jennifer Maia, Liz Carmouche, Lauren Murphy was having a lot of success. And it's like, Valentina is objectively so much better than most of these women. You know, and that's, I just was addressing, I don't want to be disrespectful to WMMA, but I mean, Valentina Shevchenko is a lifelong mixed martial artist and somebody that I think has way more skills and tools than anybody. But she just, like you said, she chooses to go for the takedowns. She's not going down the path of least resistance, which would be piecing up on the feet, finding a big finish. And it's so confusing, and it results in very lackluster performances. People say, oh, she's got pillow hands, she's got this. It criticism. Valentina Shevchenko's game planning and fight IQ opens herself up to criticism, and it's so unnecessary, because I think that she could easily get those big, you know, Jessica I KOs every time she goes out, but she doesn't. So that's, you know, we'll see where Shevchenko goes from here. Still, I mean, again, one of the top three or four women of all time in mixed martial arts, but it's just, it is so confusing, because you look at it from an outsider perspective, and again, I've never fought, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I just think historically she's shown so much. Why is she doing this here and now in the cage at this time? But God, I don't know.
Because once you lose that title, man, she's on such a streak to cement herself as a Ronda Rousey. But will we ever see another Ronda Rousey? Will we ever see another Conor McGregor? Can Valentina reach that status? Joanna, as you know, as amazing as she did during her career, she was kind of in the shadows of Ronda. Yeah. Even Amanda Nunes, she was right there on the brink, and then boom, a huge upset happens, which is another reason why I love mixed martial arts, because you don't know what's going to happen inside there. I mean, anything can happen.
It's unpredictable. And you ask, right, can we have another Conor McGregor? Can we have another Ronda Rousey? These game changers, these pioneers for the scene. I say no, unlikely. And the reason I say this is because I almost view figures in MMA, personalities, players, competitors, as a tree. Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, they are the trunk. They are the biggest elements that form the most integral part of bringing this from the ground up. Now we're working on the branches, you know what I mean? And we're getting these smaller fighters, and maybe get a big branch, right? Maybe get a huge branch that's named Khamzat Chimaev. But at the end of the day, there is a trunk that's been well established, and exploring that further, you just run into copycats. Look at Ian Gary, talented guy, but everyone says, this guy's just a Conor McGregor copycat, right?
You see that a lot, yeah.
Comparisons because of that trunk that's been established. And now that's one school of thought. I think that easily you could have somebody come in and be just as game changing, right? But I do think that there's some validity in the opinion of, we've already had these big names. They've already been cemented. It's difficult to bring in somebody else that's not compared to these people.
It's crazy too, because with the Ronda and Conor thing, it happened at the perfect time in mixed martial arts, where we were transferring from Fox to ESPN. That's basically why it sold for $4 billion. However, things kind of fell apart, but we have seen, you said it perfectly, branches. And there's been a lot of guys and girls that we've seen, we're like, oh my God, this might be the next one. This might be the next one. However, people get so excited and they're not as careful. We may never see something as beautiful as Conor McGregor coming in. I guarantee we'll never see somebody like Ronda Rousey go in there and finish girls the way that she was. I mean, people don't give her the respect that she really deserves. However, when it comes back to Valentina, I mean, the most that she can do is just kind of be in the shadows, which is really sad. And I'm sure there's a lot of females out there that look up to her. She's been doing this her entire life. Her sister also, you know, going from Muay Thai over to UFC. I mean, it's a crazy lifestyle she lives too. So I wonder how much longer she's going to fight for. It's another situation where Ronda was in, where you didn't think anyone could beat her, you know? And then, you know, this weekend, that was a decent fight from her opponent.
Yeah, and you know, same opinion with Amanda Nunes, right? The Lioness was viewed as this unbeatable figure. Juliana Pena comes in, pieces her up on the feet, finishes her on the ground. Like you said, the unpredictability of the sport is the biggest reason why I watch it. And I think another reason why we just won't see these huge figures that have those runs. I mean, McGregor to the title is a streak of finishes and wins that you just can't replicate.
Oh, beautiful.
Because the game's evolved as well. These people, right, this roster is more talented, it's multi-level, there's a lot more depth in these divisions, so it's harder to put on those performances and find those finishes. It will take a truly, truly special mixed martial artist like Jack Della Maddalena to replicate the, no, I'm high on Jack Della Maddalena, but that point still stands. It's hard to do it these days because I think just the landscape is entirely different from 2013, 2014, but again, we don't know. We don't fucking know. Who knows? Tomorrow, they could sign some big cat that's 20-3, and they're bringing him over from Singapore, and then he just starts lighting it up. Like, that could also very well happen. We just don't know.
So what I like to do at this point, after we recap, is rate the pay-per-view. And what I look at when I rate a pay-per-view, I look at the main event, the co-main event, making sure that there were finishes there, because that's what you're going to remember in the long run. Were there people that were coming up that made an impact for their career that you're excited to see them fight again? I gotta give this one, and you gotta remember, we're paying $90 for it, you know?
Right, so that's another factor to consider. Is it worth it?
What do you think about this?
I'd go a solid 8.73. Great main event.
I'm gonna play those numbers.
It's a great main event. The co-main was a little bit lackluster. There was a few fights that, you know, couldn't I was very busy. I'll say this. I had a watch party. I was out and about drinking a ton. But, I mean, you had that huge women's KO on the early prelims. I'm forgetting the name. Is it Ramona Silva Juarez? I think it's Silva Gomez Juarez. I might be mixing up the name. But that was a huge KO. The Zhang Wei Li knockout, the Jack Della Maddalena finish, the main event. Solid 8.73.
I'm going to give it a 7. 7 out of 10. Just because I'm really upset about Glover, so I'm a little biased. Valentina sure. Showing a different angle of her game, and you know, Joanna, that was another point that we're going to remember. You know, I'm trying to look at it as like, what are we going to remember from it? And you know what, maybe I could go for an 8 as well, actually, because Joanna retiring, you know, then the two title fights. So yeah, I'm going to give it an 8. So moving forward, Ben, I got to ask you, man, you did one hell of a job at the event that you were just at. Can you get into that a little bit?
Thank you.
How you got involved with it? And man, I got to say, you really put on an amazing performance, you know, hosting and on the mic, and then getting the kid was walking away and you're like, bro, don't you want your check?
Come on back. You want your $2,500. Yeah. I appreciate that a ton. Thank you. I don't really talk about my esports work as much in the timeline simply because it doesn't track all that well, so I'm just like, okay, I'm not gonna put it out. But the ESFL, which is the Esports Fight League, is the UFC's partnered esports league. So I've been working as a commentator and an analyst for about 16, 17 months with them, and it's been an amazing journey to get that point. That is a god much longer conversation. But ESFL Live is our first big in-person event. We did it at the HyperX Esports Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. I drove up. I got back from Puerto Rico the night before, drove up to Vegas that morning. Yeah, I was, well, you know, because I was like on the fence about going, and I was texting the owners, and they were like, hey, can you come? Can you be camera ready? And I was like, sure, right? I can.
Always got to be ready.
I'll come. Yeah. And I was like, I threw it on. And so I drove up there and I really didn't know if I was going to be doing anything because I had been telling them, I was like, look, it's the last minute that I'm going to be here. Cause originally I was supposed to be in Europe for a month and a half. So many things changed. And then I realized, oh, I can actually make this event. So, I'm driving up and I told them, if I don't do anything, that's fine. I just want to meet all the competitors, all the staff members and just have a good day. But I get there and immediately they're like, hey, we need you to do the quarterfinals. Can you do that? That's and awesome. I was like, sure. So I hop in the booth. I've never called any fights with I'm a Boxer before. I've seen his work. And so I had no clue who this guy was, but you gotta hop in, you gotta get there. And so we did those four fights. And then afterwards, the owners, they got the belt, they got the check. They're like, hey, can you do the post fight, you know, announcing and the questions? And I was like, sure. I have never, and I'll tell you what, man, I've never done the whole like, ladies and gentlemen, like I've never done that before as anything anywhere. So I was a bit nervous, but I was happy with that. And then Anthony Romero is an incredibly gifted kid. And he's worked so hard. And obviously you watch that post fight speech, he's been dealing with so much. And I am just infinitely proud of both him, all the competitors, Swab Jamie, Trixie, Dabikin, Prioxis coming out, Marshall Mind. Like it was, Eddie, when I tell you what, this UFC esports scene doesn't get the love that it deserves. EA and the UFC do not do a good job promoting it, building it, pushing it relative to the effort that these community members are putting in. None of us are fucking paid at all, right? But it's investments that we make of our time and energy week after week after week, and they've been building this incredible promotion. And to see, oh, my chair's going down. To see that event come to fruition and go as well, way above any expectation, man. It was one of the best events I've ever been to.
Would you go back and do it again? Because, man, I feel like you should be a staple within that. Like,
right. So I'm there like number. I'm the Brennan Fitzgerald. So their John Anik is this individual named Balian who is impeccable.
Oh, from MMA on point?
He is, yeah, from MMA on point. Yeah. So really? Balian, Balian's been doing the play by play. And he was out there, met him. Him and I grabbed brunch the next day. And he's a great guy. And
great voice on him, too.
Great voice. Yeah, he's got the accent.
Rugged voice.
He's coming around. Yeah, oh gosh, he's looking there good now. And it's so good. So I was really happy to come in as the number two guy for the last 16, 17 months and just kind of see, observe, absorb. But yeah, they'll do it again next year. That'll be an annual event for sure.
So the last thing I want to do with you is, you've been on Twitter so much, you go through it, and probably every week I see about 10 or 20 of these questions. Who should I be following on MMA Twitter? So, you know, do you have 3, 4, 5 people that you would suggest for people to follow?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the problem with suggesting people is always the people who aren't named are going to bitch about it. They'll be like, well, you should have, you know what I mean? So apologies to anyone who I'm not citing. I think there are incredible accounts. Everybody is truly unique and brings something different to the timeline. I would say the three ones that I personally really always love interacting with, Alex Behunin. He's a journalist for Cage Side Press. He is a very good friend of mine, and the work that he does is truly terrific and game-changing. Art of War posts amazing street fights, and he's so many memes. And then I would say it's a three-way tie between Dovey Simulator, who is just one of the coolest cats in the game, Hectic, who has the best memes, and my man Heavyweight Thanos, JDP. That's always a good follow. So there's a couple people. If you haven't, a lot of people are probably already following them. But if you're not, they are well worth it. And again, everybody else on the timeline is great as well.
So here's my five: Kaposa, Jetty, Big Marcel, Ben yeah. Davis, and who else could be that fifth one? I would give the fifth one to James Lynch. James Lynch does amazing James work as well. And
James, I worked with him actually at Fight Club, and James is a terrific interviewer. I mean, I would see his stuff, and I would try to think, how do I get better, you know, from watching him, right? What can I gain? What sort of different questions or how he leads conversations, directs it? I'm a big fan of James.
So James, back in the day, when I started, like me and him, I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. And, you know, I would go on YouTube and, you know, I went to broadcasting school. So I would always be interested in seeing what other MMA media was doing. So I type in MMA interviews, and James was all over the place. It was always James Lynch, Ted Check, and then the big boys. And I ended up linking up with a manager, may he rest in peace, Brian Levick. And we were doing interviews with the same fighters a lot of the times, and a lot of big names as well. And I got to give James a lot of credit for being consistent. If there's one thing I could tell anyone out there that wants to be in this business, and Ben, you would probably say the same thing, you have to say consistent. People love consistency. And that's something I need to work on a little bit more, is if I say I'm going to do something Monday, I need to do it Monday. And you may find times where you might get a little, you know, down, like, oh, it's not going the way I want it to. Don't give up. Because at the end of the day, this is so much fun. Every weekend we get together. It's a family, man. So, Ben, I want to thank you so much for joining me here. And I got to ask you, man, what do you got coming up in the next week or so that people can get into?
Gosh, it is, a lot of my plans this month are very changing, and I've yet to hammer down specific details, but in the fall, I've got a massive project coming, the biggest one that I've ever done, self-produced, self-financed, self-everything.
Really?
It's gonna be, it's gonna be a show, and I really hope everyone tunes in. So that should be coming in August, September-ish. There's still so many things. I got to build the set, but it really is going to be the most fascinating thing that I think I've put out yet.
Wow. So it's going to be like a show? Is that what you're trying
to say?
It'll
be a show, yeah. There's going to be half MMA related with, you know, chatting with fighters and friends that I have. And then half of it's going to be lifestyle segments, me going around Arizona, dicking around. Could be how to make ice cream. Could be bull riding. Like, it's, you know, that's, I'll get into it deeper, but that's a quick little snippet of what you could potentially expect from that one.
So people are looking at some photos that I put up of you on the slideshow with a cowboy hat, wife beater, and I saw one photo of you and my boy Mac Malley. How did that come?
Yeah, man. So Mac is another very close friend of mine. I've known him for a little over a year. And the photo that I think you saw was the one with me, Boogerbeard, and Mac. And we're at Israel Adesanya's after party after UFC 263. Yeah, it's a crazy story. I don't want to take too long, so I'll try to summarize it as best I can. I had met Mac like a little bit before. We'd streamed together. We had a bit of familiarity. I knew he was going to be at UFC 263. So I contacted him, me, him, and Boogerbeard. We met up at the arena, got a photo together, chatted a little bit. I then, after the fights, went and hung out with Dean Thomas for probably about hour and a half.
Wow.
And connected with him. Phenomenal guy. And as I'm walking back to my car, this had to have been like fucking midnight, right? Mac pulls up in a truck and he goes, "Hey fucker, where are you going?" And I was like, I was gonna head to Israel's like after party, because I purchased the ticket like a couple weeks earlier, because I lived right next door to the bar. And Mac and Boog were like, dude, we were going as well. So we all link up and meet there. And the bar that they were at was at Varsity Tavern. Varsity Tavern, if you don't know, it's on Mill Avenue in Tempe, Arizona. It is the most popping spot on Saturday nights. And so there's a line out the fucking door. Me, Mac, and Boog are at the end of this line. And they're a little bit older, right? They're a bit out of that college party scene. So they were kind of thinking, like, how do we get in? Like, they're a bit nervous. I'm dressed in my turtleneck, my blazer. Go, okay, here's the game plan. I'm going to pretend to be your guys' security, and we're going to get on in. So we walk to the front of the fucking line, and I go to the bouncer. I lean over, and I'm like, hey, buddy, these guys are with Adesanya. Because the thing was, if you remember, Adesanya brought Boogerbeard out when they were at the fights. Adesanya put the belt on Boogerbeard. Like, that was, you know, that was such a big moment that I was like, okay, Izzy definitely put these guys on a VIP list. I was banking hard on it. And sure enough, they were on the list. So we go under. And what was funny is I followed because I'm security. They didn't even check my ID, bro. They didn't even, like, stop me. So we get in there, and we're working our way through the crowd, right? And we don't know where Adesanya is, but I'm bumping into Jamal Hill. I dapped him up. I was like, hey, man, how's your arm? And he was like, it's healing. I think I was dancing with Matt Frivola for a period of time.
Steamroller.
Yeah, my man, the Steamroller. And then there was a ginger guy there. I was really drunk. I think it was Frivola. It might not be. I'm seeing him in a couple weeks, so I'll ask him to confirm that. But so we spot Adesanya, and he's behind this VIP section. It's roped off. And me, being the fucking genius I am, was like, okay, the security thing worked once. Let's see if it works again. So I walk over, and I'm clearing a path, bro. I'm like clearing a path. It's like right through the dance floor. I've got Mac and Boog right behind me. And I go up to this second bouncer, and I lean over. And I'm like, hey, buddy, these guys are with Adesanya. And this is when things went really south for me, because the bouncer waves over at Izzy, and Israel Adesanya comes over, and I was like, oh, but then Izzy spots Boog, and Izzy was like, oh my God, Booger Beard. So Boog guns under, they fucking dap up, and they're hugging, and it's a fun moment. I start to go under, and I dap up Izzy, and I'm like halfway under, and security guard, hand on the chest, right? He's pushing me back, and I was like, for a second, oh no. This is going really wrong, really fast. And Izzy leans over to Booger Beard. He's like, hey, is this guy with you? Like, is he cool? And Boog was like, yeah, he's cool. So security guard, you know, lets me under, dap Izzy up. I'm like, great defense. Mac comes under, and we're just like dancing, hanging out with Izzy. Francis Ngannou was there. I went and dapped him up. Leon Edwards, I went and said hey to him. It was an insane night. I ended up in the hospital later.
Wow.
Because I was so dehydrated that I walked to St. Luke's, which is like a mile walk. And thankfully I'm okay. But 6 a.m., I'm walking back to my apartment. The sun's coming up. I was like, that was the best fucking night ever.
That is an epic story, man. If only that was caught on camera, man. That would have been epic. So what I like to do at this point in the interview is hand the imaginary microphone over to you. If you have any shout outs, anything at all, the floor is now all yours.
Yeah, man, you know, I've got a lot, like I said, that I'm trying to cook up, and within this industry, approaching it the way that I am is very unconventional, right? You cited broadcast school. I studied finance at ASU, you know what I mean? Like, I never did sports broadcasting or journalism. I'm really trying to make waves on my own shoulders. And so any followers of Ben the Bane Davis on any platform, Verdict MMA, I work with them as a TikTok ambassador. Howlerhead, also, I work with them as a brand ambassador. So go pick
seriously?
Up a bottle. Use code Bane and get 0% off. We're still working on a cut now. But so yeah, I'm trying my best, man. I'm doing everything that I can. And I know some people don't like me out there and they don't like the shit, but I'm very confident in what I'm doing, and I'm hoping it's going to work out.
Man, you got the energy, you got the drive, and that's what it's all about. I wish you nothing but the best. Yeah. Guys, go follow Ben. He is the biggest thing going on right now in the MMA Twitter world, and I see a bright future for him. So make sure to go give him a follow. Hopefully we'll get him back on the show with Mac Malley, and that could be a lot of fun. So thank you so much, Ben. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'm about to go get lit for my birthday.
Hell yeah. Happy birthday, brother. Thank you.
All right. God bless. There you guys go. Just finished the interview with Ben Davis. About to go out for my birthday dinner. So I'm going to try to do a show later on tonight as well. I hope you guys really enjoyed that as much as I did. I have so much to actually discuss that I couldn't get into because everyone's in a rush to leave right now. So with that being said, guys, I'm Evil Eddie from Pure Evil MMA. And remember, without evil, there's no purity. White knuckles to the end. Behave yourselves.